It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadari.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. And why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all a work in progress. I'm your host, Rob Hamadari. I'm also the author of the book Better Than You Think and co-author of the book Next Level Your Life with Kyle Wilson and several other authors. Today, I have a guest with us, Scott Smith, all the way from Independence, Oregon. Oregon. I don't know how you say it, Scott. What's the proper pronunciation of it?
Yeah. If you're on the East Coast, it's Oregon. But out here, it's Oregon.
Oregon.
So
Scott is a collaborator sitting in the juncture of strategy and execution. He's known as a motivational listener. He's a speaker, coach, and mentor who will inspire and motivate you. He works with businesses, individuals across the country. So I met Scott not too long ago, and when we did a podcast on his show, and we had a great conversation, and I'm so looking forward to this. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Rob. We had a great time talking about your book, Better Than You Think, and I was really excited to be able to come and join you on Chiseled.
There we go. And we're going to talk about how you've been chiseled in your life and to get where you are. So go back a little bit, Scott. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your upbringing to where you are now as this motivational listener, speaker, mentor, and all that. Talk to me about that.
Well, I'll tell you, Friday this week, it's going to be my 39th wedding anniversary. So,
wow.
You can't say that that my 39 years of marriage to Christine hasn't affected me. This is definitely part of the chiseling process. And as I told her, 39 years, that's a good start. So
she's chiseled you as a husband, right?
She has chiseled me. Yeah. And actually that title, motivational listener, is something that I stole from her. One time someone asked Christine, what do you do? And she, I'll say very accurately, said, I'm a motivational listener.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, that is fabulous. It's a good pattern interrupt, right? Because it affects the way our brain works, the way we think. And it was just perfect. And so I told her, Christine, I will always give you credit because I'm a good husband, just like I'm doing right now, but I'm stealing that. And that was back in 2015. And so I've had that title for a while as motivational listener. I put some brain science around it. And that goes back to my undergraduate degree. So at college, I always knew I wanted to go into business. So I studied at Oregon State University in Corvallis, Oregon, studied business with a concentration in finance and a minor in behavioral sciences, psychology, sociology, cultural anthropology, the individual groups and how we relate to each other. Turns out that's been very helpful in business. So I spent time in financial services, manufacturing, both high tech and low tech. I've had different titles, including general manager, CEO, chief operating officer, and business owner. But the favorite I'll have to say is motivational listener.
Well, so I'll say this to you, Scott. You said you stole this from your wife. Well, what I've heard a long time ago is Picasso once wrote or said, he said, good artists borrow, but great artists steal. So that means you're a great artist and stealing that line from your wife. So good stuff.
I love it. We used to say that in as an undergraduate, it's called plagiarism.
There you go.
As a graduate student, it's called research. And in business, it's called leverage. So I leveraged that title from my wife.
There you go. Good stuff. So, Scott, last time we were talking on your show, after the show, we talked a little bit about this idea of compression of space and time. Mm-hmm. And I would love for you to chat more about that or talk a little more about that, because I think, like, I got some buddies in mind that we talk about this thing, you know, space and time. And from a linear and logical thing, you know, there's space and there's time, mm-hmm. and it works that way. But I think there's more to it than that. And I'd love to hear your take on it.
Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff that goes into this. And, you know, I'll start with when we were children, 9, 10 years old, little kids, right? Summer vacation lasted forever. You were ready for school because you missed your friends. It had been so long, and you just can't imagine how long you have to wait for Christmas to get here. But as you get older, time compresses. And that's in our summer, this summer, now here it is. Right in the middle of August and coming to the end of the summertime, this summer just flew by. And we're already planning for what we're going to do for 2024. So I heard this interview with a lady. She's 100 years old. They asked her, what's it like to be 100 years old? Remember this compression of time. She says, well, first of all, you eat breakfast like every 10 minutes. Right? So here's this comparison, right? From being a child when time seems to drag on to when we get older and it just seems to fly by. So how do we measure that? And there's research out there that's been done, but nobody put math to it. How do I compare what an hour or a day feels like to a 10-year-old or to a 50-year-old or to an 80-year-old? And that's what I've done.
Yeah, it's amazing because it's, and we know, and you just said it, I feel like I can speak personally that as the years go by, they seem to move quicker. And it's the same amount of time in each day and it's the same amount of days in every month and same amount of months in every year. And so why is that?
Yeah, that's, you know, there's some different research that's out there that's been done, and it's how long have you lived? So to 5-year-old, you know, 1 year is 20% of that person's life. But as you get older, it becomes less. It could be because we have memories and we have experience. And these are things, well, a lot of it, I mean, it's great and it's all theory, but what's the practical application? Because I'm very pragmatic. I want to know, that's interesting, but what do I do? So let me just give you some of this practical application. So my son, he's graduating from high school and kind of preparing for what he was going to do, 18, 19 years old, right? Time is longer for him, feels longer. For me, time feels shorter. So 60, 61, right? So we've got years in difference between us. We'll just say 40 years worth of difference between us. Time feels short to me. Time feels longer for him. Well, it affects our feeling of urgency. Because if time feels longer for him, if we have a month to do something, it might feel like a month and a half, 2 months for him. And for me, it might feel like, you know, it's only 3 weeks. 2 weeks. So now we have a delta of 4 to 5 weeks. That affects our sense of urgency. I think we got to get this done. He's like, we got plenty of time.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm in real estate and I get somebody under contract. And there's usually 30 days between the time you get someone under contract and the time they settle. And those 30 days may seem like forever to the client or to somebody, but those 30 days in my world, I mean, they go by like this. They go so quick, but it's the same 30 days, right? So do you want to share a little bit? I think you were talking to me about these 18-year segments. Do you want to share that or what your thoughts are on that?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I thought about in this is how do we break up life? And because generally speaking, from 0 to 18, from birth to 18 years old, when you hit that age of majority, right, when you can vote. And that's generally the time that's controlled by our parents. So I thought, you know, 0 to 18, that's good. Well, let's look at the next set of numbers and so forth. And so what we end up having is we have these segments of 18 years of time that, and basically we can say that these go from 0 to 94, 95, right? So we've got five groupings of time. The first one, 0 to 18, this is when we're learning, right? And the next 18 is 19 to 37 years old, and we're growing, going to school, we're learning our career, building our life, right? Then that third one is establishing. We're now becoming who we're going to be for the next grouping of years. In the fourth 18 years, 57 to 75, that's where we're really gathering. I call that reaping. And then 76 to 94, we're benefiting from all of this time. Now, 95 plus, by the way, I call that bonus time. And so, you know, you hit that sixth grouping, that's bonus time. By the way, it's like 0.2% of the U.S. population is 95 or better. So it's a small grouping, but there's different things that happen within those different 18-year segments, which, you know, we've got dozens and we've got a score, 20, but we don't have anything for 18. So I looked into Latin for this, and I call it octodecim, right? It's 10 and 8. So we have these five octodecims that we transition through. So this was the basis, these groupings of 18.
Interesting. So then what, like, you dig into each one, like you say, you're learning from 0 to 18, growing from 19 to 37. So how do you I guess put this together? Like, I think you're talking about doing something with a, if I'm allowed to say, the book this at some point in time, mm-hmm. with this, right? So right. Like, you just gave me a 5-minute excerpt of it, right? So if we were to dig into a little deeper, what's like, where do you think of those five, I guess, areas? The bonus is the bonus, right? But I guess when you're in each segment of that time, that's probably the most important in that time. Mm-hmm. I would think that's it.
Yeah, there's things that change. So basically, within each of those octodecims, then I look at seven areas. And they're things like, it's the level of influence we have over others. And then the degree of responsibility that we have for others, the amount of authority that we carry, the level of control over ourselves, our perceived relevance by society, the amount of independence we have, and the number of major transitions that we have. So from 0 to 18, we don't have a lot of transitions that are major transitions. I mean, yeah, you change schools, but basically you're just going to school and then you graduate. But also at 0 to 18, we don't have a lot of influence. We don't have a lot of responsibility for other people. We don't have a lot of authority. People are not coming to us and asking for advice. However, when you're in that fourth octodecim of reaping, your level of authority is at the highest. It's at the peak, right? That 57 to 75, those are the gurus that we're turning to. They've had life experiences. They have a lot of influence, and they have a lot of responsibility. As you get older, and you go into the next level, into benefiting, 76 to 94, our influence drops. Now, I was just having a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a lady I volunteer with, and she's in that second octodecim, right? Just starting her career. She's out of college, starting her career into now her second job. And she was expressing some of these feelings that we're able to look at based on this model, because she has education, she has some experience, but the people around her don't really feel like she has authority. And so her ideas are not necessarily taken to the level that they should be based on their perceived relevance that she has, right? The perceived authority she has. So these are not necessarily things that we can change, but we can learn to live with the way they are based on the society and the environment that we're in.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't necessarily change them, but like, for instance, you talk about the level of influence over others, right? From mm-hmm. 19 to 37, right? You might not have a lot of influence, but if you start working at something, you start doing really well at something, and you can at that point start to have influence over others. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the fact that you're 38 to 56, but you're at an early age and you gained all this wisdom and knowledge, and maybe you went out and tried something and you really succeeded at it. At that point in time, there is a level of influence over others, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And so what happens is we want to live within the habitat, that environment that we're in, right? So if it's, we don't have a great amount of authority over that people come to us, and we don't have a lot of responsibility for others, but we do have a lot of control, right? Control is the decisions that we make. So there's a difference between control and freedom, right? So freedom is what we can do, what we're allowed to do. Control says we're going to do what we think is right or necessary. And so you have a lot of control, because in that second octodecim, you don't have a lot of responsibility for others. In many cases, you're not married. You don't have kids. You don't have a mortgage. And so if an opportunity comes up where you can take a job to get experience internationally or move across the country or try something different, or you just want to take a sabbatical and write a book, then you have that ability to do that. Whereas when you have those things like a mortgage and a minivan, you don't have that level of control, right? So at each octodecim, understand what those parameters are and be able to revel in that, right? It says, yeah, I've got these great ideas, but people don't ascribe a lot of authority to me. I don't have a lot of influence over them. But hey, I can just get up and take off and go to the beach. I can go on vacation. I can spend money the way I want to, right? And then as you move into these other octodecims, you're able to take advantage of the greater influence and authority that you have, but realize you don't have a lot of that control. You can't just uproot and leave, right? So it's ways of perceiving where we're at and reveling in what we have.
So accept where you are and the environment you're in at that point now. So it seems like to me, like with these first two octodecims, because it's funny, I was looking at something like, how do you pronounce that, right? So now that you said it a few times, I got it. Yeah. But in these first couple octodecims, it's like it's almost like be of, and I'll go biblical here, be of little children, be have that mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, go try things, go be willing to fail, because you know, now's the time. If you don't have this responsibility for others, and you're not married, don't have kids, and you just go do it. And would that make sense?
Yeah. And as humans, the phrase that I use is that we are notoriously dissatisfied, right? We're notoriously dissatisfied. So when we're young, we can't wait to be older you can't wait to graduate high school so you can go, well, I can get out of this town, or I can go to college. I can study what I want to study. I want to take the job I want to do. You know, I want to live in the house I want to live in, right? So we're always looking ahead. Then you're going, well, I want to get a bigger paycheck. I want a job with more authority, right? We're always looking to the future. Then there's some point where we get to an age where we're going, oh, I wish I was younger and I could go play basketball again for 4 hours on a concrete court and feel great, you know, physically.
Yeah, it's so, like, go ahead, I'm sorry.
We're notoriously dissatisfied at that moment where you're at. And this goes back to, so in the book, I'm noting this as the epigraph, right? And there's three things. It says, we learn from the past, we experience the present, and we imagine the future. And so this is where, you know, I want to take that focus and say, so how much time do we spend thinking about the future or dreaming about the past, right? And so my father, he said, you know, people pine for the good old days, but, you know, they want it with refrigeration. That is, they want air conditioning. They want the freedom of the past with all the benefits of the present, right? They want the paycheck that they have, but they don't want the responsibility. But we need to learn from the past. So he goes, yeah, you know, maybe 5%, right? Maybe 5% of our time we should be thinking about the past. And we need to prepare for the future, right? So you got retirement, you got all these other things that you need to plan for. He goes, you know, maybe it's 10 or 15%. But that leaves the bulk of the time for today. So let's look at where we're at today. Let's look at what level of authority do we have, what level of control, what level of influence do we have today, and enjoy that and not be dissatisfied, not be notoriously dissatisfied and want to live for the only in the future or relive the past.
I think that's powerful, especially that line, notoriously dissatisfied, because as you said it, I'm like, God, that's so true. So many of us are not living in that present moment. And I'm talking present moment, because that present moment is here and gone in an instant, right? And exactly. If I'm in a conversation with you and it's 11:30 and I'm like, man, I got lunch at 12 o'clock. You know, I'm worried about a half hour down the road, right? What am I going to eat? I'm not present if that thought's going through my mind. And so, yes, prepare for the future. Imagine a future. Dream about the future. Get excited about the future. But you can't stay there because you've got to live in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, if we allow ourselves to experience that present, you talk about being notoriously dissatisfied, but if we allow ourselves to experience the present, would that bring more joy and happiness to our lives?
I was at a networking event a couple of years back, beautiful day here in Western Oregon. It was May Day, sun's out, it's warm, you know, flowers are blooming, just gorgeous out. And I was at this table with a student from a local university, and she was in nursing, and she was really excited because it's May. She's going to graduate in June. She's been doing the interviews. She's got a job lined up. And she says, I can't wait to graduate and go to work with this job coming up. Wonderful. But I said, is today not enough? It's beautiful weather out. You're with really nice people. We have the opportunity to just converse and learn about each other. So isn't today enough?
Yeah, I wrote it down here. You said, I can't wait, I can't wait, I can't wait. How often do we say it, right? How many often do you catch yourself saying it? And how often do we hear others say it? And obviously, you heard this girl say, you heard this person say it, and you were able to say, isn't today good enough? I think that's so important because you just made me think of something. Obviously, none of this is really scripted, but I'm thinking, okay, like I read something not too long ago and was talking about contemplating death. Right. And that would sound like a morbid thing to think about. Right. But so many people fear death and so many people are afraid of it. If you thought about it enough, death could be the great motivator to live life in the present.
Sure.
So have you ever contemplated that?
Well, and oftentimes that's what happens. That's what happens is you have a near miss. You have a bad diagnosis or a friend or a family member dies. And it causes us to go, what's really important? And we used to say, we'd talk about people wishing their lives away. They say, oh, I wish it was 5 o'clock. Then I can go home. Well, I wish it was Friday. Then it's the weekend and I can go play. Oh, I wish I was retired. And then I didn't have to go to work, right? Wishing your life away. You know, I wish. It does take sometimes those moments. One of my best friends died on December 23rd, 2021. And it was a COVID-related death. He was 52 years old. That's devastating to his wife, to his son, to his friends like me. It causes you to think, what really is important? Because when you get to that end, it's done. As I look at this, as I was laying out this timeline, from the moment that we're born, time is infinite, right? We have everything available to us. At the moment we die, time is infinitesimal, right? It doesn't exist anymore. And so there's this continuum. And we need to be able to understand where we're at, why things feel the way they are, and that those moments are important. And so one of the stories that I relate is about when you're a kid. And Robert, I could probably ask you a question like this. Like, what was something that you remember when you were a child? And it might be something like, oh, every Christmas we packed up and we went to my grandparents' house and we spent Christmas Eve there and we got to open a presents and all this stuff, right? But as you dig into it, it turns out that this every Christmas was like six Christmases,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
In reality, right? From 6 to 12, and then, you know, people moved away or grandparents got sick or something, right? But you go, okay, it was really six times, and you got there at noon and you left about 8 o'clock. So you spent 8 hours. So you're telling me that one of the most important things, memories of your life, was spending 40 hours with your grandparents, one work week.
Interesting. Right?
And so, and this is not to minimize that memory or to say, really, You would go spend 8 hours with your grandparents six times in this. What it tells us is that these moments are really important. And so that one moment that you spend talking to a cashier and asking them, and this is the question I always ask, is how's your world? Because it does, it triggers our brain. It's a pattern interrupt. It causes us to think. I'll ask them that. And they tell me something that's important. And that moment is fleeting, but it could be really valuable to them. That phone call or the text that you send to somebody that says, hey, you know, I was just thinking about you, and I just want to say I really appreciate you as a friend. That moment is so important, although it's fleeting.
It's the power moments, right? And moments mm-hmm. occur in like split seconds all the time, correct?
That's exactly it.
So like in these different octodecimals, I almost messed it up.
It's a challenge.
So it's like, would you suggest or would you encourage others? Okay, say somebody's, you know, 25 right now, and you're like, tell that person to go back and think about the things in that first 18-year segment. And what did they learn? What did they experience? What are wins? What are losses? And what happened then? And then you say, okay, you're 25 now. What's happened from the time you're 19 to 25? And then apply them to whether it's degrees of influence, authority, control, perceived relevance. Obviously, we know all those things are low in those time frames. But what do you say to somebody who's 25? Say, you don't want them to say, hey, you can't wait till you're in the next octodecimal, right?
Right.
You don't want that.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
You know, this is one of those things that's interesting because a lot of times we talk about strengths and weaknesses. Oh, I'm really good at this, but I'm not so great at that. And traditional wisdom was, well, you need to work on your, maybe you write poorly. You have bad grammar, bad spelling. So you need to be better at, you need to work on your grammar. But maybe you're really good at math. Then why not do a job that's math related, not writing related? Not try to, you know, play on your strengths, not try to shore up your weaknesses. So this is the same thing. So if you have a lot of control over your life, but you have little authority, then why are you pining away for the authority that you don't have and neglecting the opportunity for control, right? And then as you get older, why are you wishing that you had that control where you could just shut everything down and go away for a month to Barbados?
And have that independence.
And not revel in the fact that you're having authority and you're able to make impact on people's lives, right? People are going to come to you and ask questions. And based on your experience and understanding, you can provide valuable guidance to them and make their lives better. So what I want to say is you'll look at the octodecim that you're at, find those things where it's strong for you and revel in that, focus on that, and don't pine away for the things that you don't have. Right. Don't be notoriously dissatisfied.
Right. And so live into your strengths.
Yes, but, exactly.
Well, so at age, if I'm age 25 and I'm still figuring things out, mm-hmm. I think you said it was like 10 to 15% imagine the future, think about the future. I want to plan for what I might want to do in the future. I might want to get some ideas and dream a little bit. And people will say, hey, you know, it's okay to dream big. What does that mean? Dream big about what? So is it about setting that goal, dreaming big, thinking about the future? And then, okay, let me think about that. I got that. I got it implanted in the back of my mind. Now let me go live right where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You know, we need to prepare. So I'm just coming off of a winding up a three-year plan. So 3 years ago, about this time, I set my plan in five areas for the end of 2023. And since then I've added another area because you live through things. But 3 years ago, when you told somebody that was 25, yeah, I'm creating a plan for 3 years out. That's unbelievable. 3 years. What are you going to do in 3 years? Right. It was bad enough to go to college for 2 years or 4 years. Right. And someone's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to med school. And that's 12 years, right? So these are, it's this perception of time. but creating a plan to be intentional. Because here's the deal. There's research that says we underestimate how much we're going to change in the future. In fact, the research is called the end of history illusion, because we believe we every point of life, we believe that we have reached our ultimate, that that 5 years from today, we'll have the same friends, we'll like the same types of food, music, and we'll go to the same types of events and have the same hobbies. But if we look back over the last 5 years, we can clearly define all of the different changes. Oh yeah, I was in this job, but then I had this opportunity, and this restaurant closed, and oh, there's this new band, and you know, this, right? Things change, and we can clearly identify them, but we think that in the future, we're not going to, this means that we underestimate how much we're going to change at any point in our life. That meant 5 years ago, I thought, oh, I'm not going to change, but I did. That meant that the change that I have undergone over the last 5 years was unintentional, right? Yeah. It was driven by something else. But if I sit down today and I go 3 or 5 years from today in these areas, in my personal, my relational, my spiritual, my professional, my professional network, because the relationships, personal and business relationships are different. So that's, so I added that in. And then the final one is financial, right? All this rolls up. So I set goals for these things. And then you have to have a plan to go, okay, well, you got a goal, but what are you going to do between now and then? And keep track of that. So I'm really happy that I did this 3 years ago. And I'm in the process of working with another group to help myself and them create the next 3 year plan.
That's great. That's great. I'm sitting there smiling because I interview a lot of realtors from this realtor network I'm in, and his name's Brian Buffini. Buffini Company's the coaching company. And you go to seminars and he talks about setting goals. He talks about setting goals in five areas. It's spiritual, family, business, finance, and then your personal self, which could be physical or emotional. And it's funny you're saying this. I'm like, you sound like you're one of us.
So there's plenty of smart people out there.
Right. So I'm like, anybody, any of those realtors that are in that community is listening to this, they say, this guy's got to be a realtor. We got to get him on board. So it's good stuff.
And this is good because I want to be intentional about where I'm going. And here's a test. The next time you meet somebody and they tell you, oh yeah, I sell real estate, or I'm an attorney, or I'm a plumber. They go, oh, that's great. How did you get involved with doing what you do? And invariably, people's response will start off something like, well, it's a really interesting story because it was unintentional. They became a real estate broker because of these things that happened. A friend of mine joined the Army Reserve because when he went to the recruiter, the regular Army was out to lunch. So,
yeah.
So he joined the Army Reserve because of circumstance, right? It wasn't planned.
So you talk about intentional, right? So yeah. I can have an intention, but what makes my intention intentional? What makes that?
Yeah. So intent. And this is interesting because this is something. So a mastermind group that I lead, this is one of the things that we talk about each week is, what are your intentions, right? What do you intend to do this week? But thinking about it is like setting a goal, right? And the intention is the action that you're actually pursuing to achieve that intent. And we see this in James Clear's book, In Atomic Habits, where he says, we don't rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. So we have to be intentional. We have to take action about what we're doing and say, if you say, I want to grow my business by 10%, I mean, that's great. I can get a third grader to multiply by percentages, right? 1.1 times 100, you're going to go to 110 this year. Great. That doesn't mean anything unless you have a set of plans, of intentions, of what you're actually going to do and execute. I'm going to make these many phone calls. I'm going to go to these visits. I'm going to, you know, these are the things that I'm going to do that will lead me to 10% growth rate.
So it's the activities that you do that make the, that turn the intention into being intentional. That's exactly what I'm hearing.
Great. I love it.
So that's awesome. So good stuff here. So Scott, a couple of things. I'm going to go a little off here because we're talking about compression of time, right? Now I'm going to go down that spiritual realm here, and this is great stuff. And thank you for sharing this. So then, you know, you talk about those octodecimals, right? And so the 18-year thing. Well, then I'm thinking, okay, you know, a year or maybe a thousand, I don't know how it's said, but maybe a thousand years on this earth is probably like one day eternal.
Right.
Right. So you talk about compression of time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know anybody that's had one of those near-death experiences and come back. I don't personally, but I've read some books. It's like, what's it, what do you perceive that to be like this compression of time? Once we die, it doesn't matter anymore, right?
Well, so part of the reason why I actually arrived at wanting to quantify what does a day feel like at a different age and so forth, right, was hearing that story of this 100-year-old saying you eat breakfast like every 10 minutes. When my son was 5 years old, he came to me and said, Dad, if we die and go to heaven and we live forever, won't we be bored? That's a great question, son. Five years old. I love it. Won't we be bored? Because at 5 years old, by the way, time feels like it's about 6x for him, right? So when I say, oh, it'll just be an hour for this pizza to cook or whatever, right? That's like 6 hours for him. It's just like, you know, I said, hey, yeah, Rob, why don't you come over and, you know, we'll have lunch and you show up and I go, yeah, 6 hours from now, we'll have, and you're sitting there in the kitchen, just sitting, waiting. Right. So he asked me, won't we be bored if we live forever? So he got me to thinking about it. And I'll say, God gave us time as a gift. But we measure time, and I'll say in one of two ways, or maybe these two ways combined. One of them is through growth, and the other is through decay, right? So if I plant a seed, and you see a stalk of corn, and it's an inch tall, and next to it is one that's 3 inches tall, you know this one has been, the taller one has been there longer, right? You're measuring it by growth. If, on the other hand, I take an apple and I slice it in half and put that half next to an apple that was sliced a day ago, you'll be able to tell because the one that was sliced a day ago is turning brown on that cut edge, right? Because it's starting to decay. So we measure time based off of growth or decay. Well, if we're in heaven and everything's perfect, right? There is no decay, there is no growth. So I could sit down on a concrete bench today, and in about 20 minutes, my butt's going to hurt, right? And after a few hours, I'm going to get hungry. And right, because it's decay that is occurring.
Yeah.
But if there is no decay, I could be sitting on that bench and an hour goes by or 1,000 years goes by and I'm not feeling any discomfort, right? So how then can I measure that? I wasn't bored. 1,000 years went by.
Yeah.
Right.
That's interesting because I was thinking about, I know we had a conversation a week or two ago, and I don't know if it was before that or maybe after you made the comment to me about your son. And I thought about that. I'm like, okay, like some people, like I thought we talked about contemplating death earlier. You know, some people like, I'm not talking about that. That's morbid. I don't want to go there. Right. Like I had a situation that happened. It was a moment for me 2 years ago. In fact, it's almost 2 years to, I mean, less than a month away, we went to a Ravens Raiders game out in Las Vegas. But after that, me and my two friends went to climb the Grand Canyon or hike the Grand Canyon. So we hiked it, you know, 15 mile hike, you know, 7.5 down, 7.5 up to where we went. And my buddy asked me when we were done, he says, Rob, he goes, what was that experience like for you? And I got emotional about it. And I was like, man, I don't know if anybody's ever been to the Grand Canyon, but it is breathtaking. And if you hike it, it's like you can hear the silence. You can hear the spirit. I that's the way I feel. And I made the comment. I'm like, if this is just a little bit a taste of what heaven's like, I use the word, I can't wait to die. I can't wait to experience that. I don't want to die tomorrow. I don't. But I'm like, okay. Because in that moment, I'm like, man, I could experience this all the time. But I question, I'm like, is it going to be boring? Because I'm a type A guy, right? I'm a type A guy. And am I going to be just sitting there floating with my angel wings and, you know, checking on Scott, checking on Joe, checking on Sue, right? You know, how boring could that possibly be? I don't know, you know, but I do, you know, my faith and my belief and my reading, I do believe that it's not going to be boring. It's going to be very fulfilling and joyful and whatnot. But I think about that. I think about that. I don't know if you ever experienced those questions to yourself, but if you have, please let me share it with us.
Grand Canyon is amazing, right? Yeah. And the Native American name for the Grand Canyon means mountains upside down. I'm like, yep, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And I remember having gone there when I was young, on my way, I was in the Air Force going from California to Texas, and we stopped at the Grand Canyon, and I pulled in, and you if you've been to the Grand Canyon, you're driving down this flat desert road, and you go into the park, you pay your fee, and you make a couple of turns, and all of a sudden there it is, and it opens up. And then I took my wife there, and I remember the first time that we went, I was waiting for her expression. And we came around that bend, and there it is, and it opened up. And it's so big, you can't get the scale of it. There's no depth perception. It's so massive. And all you do is you stand there and you look at it and you just go, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's what she said when we took our kids there. That's what they said. They come in and they're just like, wow. My daughter actually said, well, the, you know, canyon. I thought I'd stand on one side, my mom would stand on the other side, and we'd yell at each other.
That ain't happening.
It's not going to happen. But yeah, so this perception, right? Another story about my son was when he was in fifth grade, Friday afternoon, I go pick him up and from school. Typical fifth grade boy. I ask him, how was school? He says, well, I liked recess. I'm like, okay. I go, all right, son, what did you do on recess? You know, what do you do? And he's like, well, we play tag, we do football, we do tetherball, four square. I'm like, wow, it's Friday, right? I go, wow, you did all that this week? He goes, no, we did that today. It's like, you did all those things today at recess. How long is recess, right? I'm, you know, the parent going, what's my kid doing in school all day? He goes, oh, it's 15 minutes. 15 minutes. Right. He's like, five different things they did. I go, look, Rob and I couldn't even decide which coffee shop to go to in 15 minutes.
It's crazy. Yeah, that's really cool. So, Scott, let me ask you this question here. So, like, you've come up with this idea. I mean, you do your motivational listening, your speaking and mentoring, and you're thinking about putting all this together, this book that you got, you're going to have coming out at some point in time. And you don't have a title for it yet, do you? Or do you?
No, it's, you know, this concept of the octodecims. It was the theory of 18s is just kind of like what I'm like, well, that's pretty boring.
Yeah.
And octodecim doesn't mean anything, so I can't say, you know, I can't put that on the title. Right now, the file folder that I keep everything in is just called Book of Time. The Book of Time.
Okay. So as you continue to move down this road and put this thing together, you know, how much more chiseling do you got going on in your life? You talk about growth and decay. How do you measure time, right? And so. Mm-hmm. I believe, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I believe you believe you still got a lot to go. There's a lot more to go in your life. So where do you see yourself getting chiseled further down the road?
Yeah. So my wife's business is, she has a show she does every week. I produce for her, and it's aspects of aging, and it's unscripted conversations. And it's on the agingbetternetwork.com. So there's my plug.
There you go.
She talks about the third of your life, right? So we became empty nesters. My son moved out. We sold the house. We moved into an apartment, give ourselves a lot of flexibility and freedom. Well, we're talking about the third of our life. So life is not over when that happens. You've only, you're only 60% in, right? You've still got another third of your life to roll. That's a long time, right? So, and again, now I'm into that octodecim, the fourth, right, where I have the maximum level of authority and influence. So I'm involved in a group called Uplift Leadership, and we provide guidance, career guidance for high school and college students. We have a nonprofit organization called Edvocation, and we're focused on students that are not necessarily college bound, but are interested in trades. And so providing pre-apprenticeship, apprenticeship programs for those students to be able to explore that as a career option. And these are things that I can do because I have this authority, I have this influence, and it's a way for me to revel in those levels of that I have available to me, not be worrying about the things that I can't do, right?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, so that's where I'm at. So I'm really, as my wife says, you know, we're just entering this third of our life.
Yeah. Is there an underlying, like, I know what I've heard several times in this conversation. So before we go, is there an underlying message that you want to just deliver to people right now as we're talking?
Yeah. You know, I just go back to that question to ask, is today not enough?
Yeah. Right? I like that. Is today not enough? So if I'm sitting there, whether I can't, if I'm looking in the mirror, if I'm sitting there saying, I can't wait to lunch, if I can't wait, I can't wait. Then you combat that, or you're offset that by saying, is today not enough?
Right.
Or is this moment not enough?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Cause I heard you, God, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm just saying, exactly. Here I am. I'm having a conversation with Robert. We're having fun. Just talking.
Yeah.
And I'm not coming into this and going, well, when is this going to air? What's it, you know, when is it going to, so I can do all this. Why can't I just enjoy the conversation?
Yeah.
And
then
when that moment comes and this gets released, I'm going, oh, I'm going to share this out with my friends and family and colleagues and go, look, here's this great conversation that we had.
Yeah. Cause what I was going to say, what I've heard over and over, you used the word like four or five times, revel. And I'm like, you know, revel in every moment, revel in the moment, appreciate that moment, live in that moment and revel in. I love the word. So that's awesome stuff, Scott. I really appreciate everything you've delivered here to us today. And if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Yeah. Easy way is to go to my website because all the contact information is there, dscottsmith.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn, on YouTube, and Twitter, which is now X. It's there, but you'll find the little Twitter icon, I think, and all that stuff. My phone number is there. However you want to get a hold of me, I'm happy to talk.
Man, that's been great. It's been awesome talking to you. Like you said, I had fun with you on your show not too long ago, and I appreciate you being on my show here today. Thank you for that. Appreciate you. You are impacting people. You're helping people revel in their moments and their six octodecims. So thank you for that, Scott. I appreciate you. And until next time, everybody, let's go get chiseled.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pomodoro. Sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than.